Okay, so what you're saying is Kant?
Yeah, so Kant is pro Kirby.
Kant is pro Kirby. Kant is that one comic that everyone makes fun of where the guy is like, I lost my bike, but the guy who stole my bike's probably happier than me because that makes the happiness okay in the world.
Shenanigan? Shen?
Yeah.
I follow that guy.
Yeah,
Yeah, I read
it's that
comics.
comic.
I like his comics, they're cute.
So Kant is that.
I guess so? Not really. That's more about the greater good. So no, the bike beam, I don't think necessarily aligns with Kant's theory. Although it's an interesting hypothesis,
Thank
which we
you for
should
yes.
look into,
Yeah.
perhaps. I actually don't understand people's big fucking deal with that comic. It's
I
cute.
yeah, it's cute. I mean,
It reminds me of a lot of weird mind tricks that my brain does when I'm depressed, which I assume is what it's
yeah,
meant to
like
do.
his people make fun of that guy a lot, and
Yeah, that's another one of those things that I do not care for. I like his comic, and even if I didn't like it,
I
other people
think
do.
it's one of
Shut the
those
fuck up,
things
everyone
that's
else.
like he's very popular.
Yeah, exactly. And it's jealousy. I've
Yeah.
seen the fucking oatmeal guy.
Oh,
The guy that
yeah.
makes the comic The Oatmeal made a comic making fun of Shen's comics. And I was like, are you kidding me? You do the same job.
There is a certain
Your comics are more so whatever you are accusing him of being.
what
Clickbait heavy.
what I would say is
Sorry, I got off
that
on a tangent.
no, I
Now we're on
mean
a tangent.
what I would say is that not only is Shen's comics popular, but they are also lacking in cynicism.
Exactly.
And the
Yeah.
oatmeal has a certain cynicism.
Yeah.
And cynicism, when people are cynical, they feel smart. And so not only is this thing popular, Shen is popular,
But also, I'm
also
smarter than
I'm
him, so why
smarter than
is he
him.
more popular?
Exactly.
Yeah,
It's
for
a
sure.
jealousy and a hatred
A
of
superiority complex.
genuineness and love of cynicism.
Yeah, that's well put.
Thank you.
Indeed.
Seen a script, but I've no doubt if it isn't up to par, they'll chuck it out. Ooh la 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 la. All my actor friends are cracking wise, but I can see the envy in their eye. Ooh la 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 la. Now I'm suffocating in the makeup chair, underneath the corner glue and a bag of hair. I'm looking like an overgrown Shih Tzu. Somehow I always knew.
Hello, and welcome to Fanfiction Writers Room, the writers room for fanfiction.
I am your editing manager, Spencer Suarez.
And I'm your managing editor, Liz Cernick.
On this show, we write fanfiction based off your suggestions for characters. Send your fanfiction character suggestions to FFWRshow@gmail.com. Liz, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Spencer. Work has been pretty crazy.
Yeah.
We recently got moved from one floor of the office to the other floor of the office. And this is very particularly noteworthy to me because I've been getting in late to work every day, roughly for the past 5 weeks, perhaps.
I love getting in late to work.
Yes. And nothing came of it. So I figured, oh, okay, well, work doesn't care what time I get in. Great. I'm gonna get in at 11 every day. Sometimes 11:30, sometimes 12. When it did reach 12, my supervisor finally would be like, Liz, come on, before noon. At least before noon. But she was very good about she just doesn't care, whatever. As long as I get all my work done and I actually put in a full 8 hours every day, it's fine. We're moving to another floor. And so I learned to my chagrin that it doesn't turn out that no one cares what time I get in. It was just that no one who would care
Right.
worked on the floor that I worked
You
on.
had
So my producers, my higher ups, the directors, none of them knew what time I was getting into work. So when we did get moved, and we were getting our computers and our chairs moved at 10 a.m., my supervisor was like, Liz, you super need to get in at 10, just for 10. Come on. They're really going to know if you're not there while they're moving your desk. And I was like, oh, no, you mean they just didn't know? And she was like, yes. I mean, because my supervisor didn't care. She was like, I don't care. It's fine. But other people definitely do care. And I was like, uh-oh. So she was like, what can I do to help you? Like, shower the night before so you don't need to shower in the morning. I was like, okay, check.
Wow.
And then she was like, it was like half, you know, tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then we decided, should I call you in the morning? Uh-oh. And I was like, very tentative about Lee. I was like, would you? Would you actually? And
that's
she was like, yeah, no, I will
so
get it.
Good.
It was so that nice. Warms it was my supervisor, heart. Alex. It was amazing. And I was like, would you actually do that for me? Because it wasn't just a wake-up call. It was also, like, this personal affirmation mm-hmm. of, like, I care about what happens in your life.
Yes.
I notice that you are alive. And I think getting in late so frequently made me forget that other people notice me, that I am a live person.
There is, I mean, both of us are not living with a person in our bed right now.
Right, yeah.
And there is something about, like, the times that I have had someone there just like mm-hmm. motivates me in not partially out of
yeah.
embarrassment, but also just partially out of like, there is someone that matters right in front of me. That's
uh-huh.
like, I'm not, if I fail, this person isn't going to starve or whatever, but it's just like, someone's there.
Yeah, just realizing that your actions have an effect
exactly.
on the people around you. It was a very nice, so it was a nice moment. And she did. She called me
that's
the next
wonderful.
The next morning at 9 o'clock. And she was like, are you out of bed? And I was like, yeah, I'm ready to go. And she's like, okay, get on. And it was like, I'm still not even getting into work on time,
no.
like at 9 a.m. It was just to get me in there by 10 a.m. But it was just a really nice gesture. And so, and then I got in and we moved our desks and it was great. And we're on the fifth floor now. And it's
wow.
a very nice little office. And we're next to a window. Finally, near window. So I think it's going to be pretty good. I'm
that
feeling
sounds,
pretty hopeful.
You know,
yeah.
that sounds hopeful. It sounds like there's a
yeah.
lot of, like, things are looking up. You got a wake-up call. People are telling
mm-hmm.
you that, Liz, I care about you.
That's right.
And
I matter to them.
You know, that's like, for some reason, workplace comedies,
mm-hmm.
like, the core of the workplace comedy is, like, this is a family. It's, like,
yeah.
the people, like, the characters on The Office are more than just they
yeah.
love each other.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they all have individual lives
yeah,
and
yeah.
only really see each other at work.
Mm-hmm.
And but, like, they love each other.
Yeah, just being invested in the people around you. And without meaning to. You can't help but, yeah.
Do you want to write a workplace comedy with me?
Maybe.
Let's
Maybe.
Try to write a workplace comedy.
Good. Yeah.
Our first character is Frodo from the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh, okay. Frodo.
Thank you, Tyler, for sending in Frodo.
Now, Frodo is Bilbo Baggins' nephew.
Mm-hmm.
Played by Elijah Wood in the blockbuster movies.
Of course.
By Peter Jackson.
Now, what I know about Frodo is he's precocious?
Is he? I think Frodo's a tough nut to crack because he's very much the quintessential protagonist where he's kind of on purpose a blank slate. For the audience a little bit.
Yeah.
His journey is all about, like, it's an internal conflict between this ring, ambition, and duty. I don't know.
There's
I'm
a
not,
certain amount of, like,
I've seen the movies. I'm not super into Lord of the Rings.
I also don't love Lord of the Rings. I actually watched them all for the first time.
Oh, really?
This year.
What?
Like,
you didn't see them in theaters, you mean?
No.
Well,
and
what's the point of even watching them then?
And I'd seen bits of them here and there. Like,
uh-huh.
I know what they're about. But I'd never sat down and watched all of them. And I watched them for the first time this year. And I found myself like, man, I hate all of these people.
Were you watching the extended editions?
I didn't watch the extended first film, but the second and third I watched the extended, because that's what was on Netflix.
Okay, were you also watching them in a marathon session? That would be a tough slog.
A marathon, but like it was over the course of like 2 days.
Okay.
So it was like a tough slog, and I was like, I hate, like, these people are all boring, and yeah. I don't know why any of them are doing this.
I also found them super boring.
Except for the first movie was fun. Samwise Gamgee.
That's right.
And this is controversial.
Ooh.
Gollum.
Yes.
Gollum has an arc in a way that no character in that film has an arc.
Right? With the exception, the friendship between Legolas and Gimli was a nice bit of leverage, but it was
it's not exactly an arc as much as these two learn to respect each other.
Yeah, and there wasn't, yeah.
It's not like they really grow, it's not like...
But they grow in the fact that they
grow to
respect each other.
Do we feel like Gimli is now not racist anymore after the events? Does he now have his one elf friend?
Well, that's the thing.
I'm not racist. I have my one elf friend.
That's always the beginning. That's the crack in the shell, in the all racist armor.
Okay,
the
great.
The chink in the...
I'm glad we're solving racism on our fanfiction podcast.
Well, specific to elves.
Okay.
Against elves.
Yes.
So Frodo. Okay. Frodo in the workplace.
Like, but, okay, just... To zoom back in on Frodo,
right.
I would say Frodo is, yes, he is the, like, very much the protagonist character, but in that there are certain tropes that we can fit him into.
Mm-hmm.
Very much he has a want for adventure,
right.
Which is kind of uncommon in his village. He's sort of like a Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
Right, he's a dreamer.
Everyone else is like, why are you a dreamer? Like, life's great here in the Shire. Why are you wanting to go adventure? Mm-hmm. That's weird. Part of why he does what he does is... his own desire for the ring, but also part of it is a certain nobleness where, like, he decides to... I think the reason why he leaves the group at the end of the first movie is because they're all gonna die if he sticks around.
Yeah, I think it's duty. I think it's a sense of responsibility. I'm gonna take this on.
The witch lady, like, becomes a demon and is like, rah, I want the ring!
She's testing him?
I didn't really get what that was about.
I don't think anyone does. Unless you've read not only the Lord of the Rings books, but also the Silmarillion, and also The Hobbit, and also The Hobbit Unabridged, and also all of his notes. There's a lot.
So you don't understand Lord of the Rings unless you're J.R.R. Tolkien.
Basically.
And yet those films have made over a billion dollars.
Because there's a surface-level adventure story. That's very fine.
I mean, that's true.
Yeah.
So, our next character is King Dedede from the Kirby games.
Oh, King Dedede.
I want King Dedede to be the boss.
Oh, the boss of the company. Because he's a boss level.
Yes.
Oh, that works so well.
Now, King Dedede is... he is sort of...
Speaking of characters with really well-defined personalities, they're just like a blank slate.
What I would say about King Dedede, judging from the Kirby games, is, like, he's sort of a bad guy, but he's not really evil as much as he's greedy.
Yeah.
He's not really...
And he also loves, like, vacuuming things up with his mouth and then spitting them back out
he's
at his
aggressors. He's all about that.
Yeah.
He's, like, that's his, like, favorite thing.
But how can one turn that into a business? A business plan specific to sucking things up.
And spitting them out
at your enemies.
He also enjoys having a large hammer.
Oh,
could we work with that?
Hammers. Hammers. And Frodo's got his ring. I mean, his ring. Frodo's pretty good at carrying things from one place to another. So some sort of messenger company?
A messenger company makes sense.
Courier service?
Okay, I like that. I like that. Sort of like a King of Queens situation here.
Right, yeah. Except it focuses on the workplace rather than his home environment.
Not the fact that he's a very fat man.
Yeah.
And how hilarious is it that he has a very attractive wife?
It could be pretty good Frodo in his sitcom King of Queens with his Hobbit wife, yeah. And also Uncle Bilbo's there in the basement, living in the basement. Did you ever watch King of Queens?
Yeah, a little bit.
Like, and he's like wacky old dude doing his wacky things, driving Frodo crazy. But we're not going to focus on that.
No,
parent.
Yeah,
it was on work.
Work environment. This is a workplace comedy.
And
so, I like the idea of a courier service. Mm-hmm. Let's go with that.
Is there, like, a currency or a thing that the Kirby Land... Like, do they use stars or hearts or something?
You collect stars in the Kirby games. I believe that
Could
is
be
their
star...
coin equivalent, their ring equivalent,
yeah.
Is stars.
So King Dedede has set up his, like... stars for you.
Does this take place in Dreamland, then?
Oh, I guess it makes more sense to take place in...
Do we want it to take place
Lord
in, like...
Lord of the Rings. You know what I kind of like? Is if it's just, like, the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring, the entire movie.
Okay.
But through the lens of, like, how The Office was shot.
Yes.
So characters... And it makes sense, right? Because the Fellowship of the Ring, they're essentially co-workers.
Yeah.
And Gimli and Legolas hate each other. And they would definitely, like,
so
Legolas
they are
would
Dwight
definitely
and,
be pranking Gimli,
and,
like, all the time. Yeah.
What is the Dwight's...
Jim.
Jim.
Yes. We're basing it off of The Office American version.
Yes.
Because that's the one we grew up with,
sure.
Anyways. Have you seen the UK version?
I think I am more familiar with the UK version, funny enough. But
I guess it makes sense, because it's like the first three episodes, basically. The ones
mm-hmm.
everyone remembers.
Yeah.
The Jell-O, the wacky dances, and, like,
yeah.
The romance.
The romance. She said no, by the way.
So...
Oh, Martin Freeman. My poor heart.
So, Frodo... Well, Sam has been pining for Frodo. But Frodo is engaged to the ring that he needs to. He's engaged
okay.
to his idea
well,
of
should
duty,
we...
of responsibility.
Okay, so this is a... So the Fellowship is the group.
Yes.
Okay, the workplace.
The office.
For some reason...
King Dedede is also there. Make no mistake, he's also there. Is he taking the role of Gandalf? Or is he just there with Gandalf?
You know, I think Gandalf? Golf?
Golf. With an A.
It's not a silent L?
Gandalf. No, it's Gandalf.
Gandalf.
Yeah.
Okay. Gandalf is, like, his underling. Like, he's, like, basically, King Dedede is the CEO, and Gandalf
right.
is the, like, manager.
Okay. That makes sense.
And then... So Frodo and Sam have this romance,
mm-hmm.
but, like...
Will they, won't they?
Will they, won't they?
Say it aloud.
Gimli
the dwarf.
I
yes.
love Lord of the Rings. Gimli and...
We're big old pop culture fans. We know all the...
And Legolas have their rivalry,
mm-hmm.
and...
Who else is there?
Gollum... is...
Wait, also Sean Bean is there. What the hell is Sean Bean doing there?
He's a king, right? No, he's
is
not
the
king. He is the prince guy.
Big Lord of the Rings fan.
Sean Bean is... He's the one who says you can't simply
His
walk into Frodo, right? He's not the one...
He's the meme man.
...that becomes the
one
return...
One does not
he's,
simply walk into Mordor.
Sean Bean is the one that gets shot protecting the...
Yeah, the most affecting scene in the first movie,
yeah,
I would say.
For sure.
I think he's Boromir.
Yes, Boromir.
His
he his love for the little people, the little folk.
Yeah.
He ends up protecting them and dying for that.
From the
but
kingdom of
heaven.
No. I was trying to think of the actual country he's from in Lord of the Rings.
You're not referencing the Orlando Bloom film?
Oh yes, that is what I was referring
okay.
to. Yes. The Kingdom of Heaven, the Crusades, and all that.
All that.
Jazz.
Gollum is... I'm gonna
Rohan! Rohan.
Okay.
He's from Rohan.
I always get Boromir and the King mixed up. Who's the King's
Aragorn.
Name? Aragorn.
Strider.
Because they look the same.
They do not, but okay. Okay. I mean, yes, okay. Wait. They are both full-grown adult Caucasian men with beards. And I guess semi-long hair. But one has, like, bright orange hair, and one has black hair. I can see where you could get them confused. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I forgot Sean Bean was even there, because he just, like, blends in with Aragorn's character.
Yeah, and, like, Boromir. He dies.
It doesn't help that later on we meet his brother, Faramir.
Oh, it's yeah.
Me. Boromir, too.
It's just, like, his...
Here's him again.
His whole deal is, like, living in his brother's shadow. It's like, okay, we're...
His deal is that he is on a secret double mission for his home country to steal the ring for
Rome. Right.
And he's like, no, I can't do this anymore.
Because,
you gotta protect the world.
The little folk.
We gotta protect those little babies.
But how do we apply all this very exciting knowledge of Lord of the Rings into a workplace sitcom?
Well...
About a courier service.
Well, maybe the courier service is literally like...
They're like a FedEx.
Yeah. So, Sauron, Big Evil Sauron, calls up King Dedede's Stars For You.
I feel like we really have to figure out how King Dedede would run a business as well. But, okay, so...
Yes.
But let's focus... Let's go to where you are right now.
Yes, okay. So Sauron calls him up and he's like, listen, I got this ring. I really need it back from Gollum.
Okay.
And can you deliver it in
Do they have to
less?
Get it from Gollum? Like, they have to wrestle it from Gollum?
Hmm.
Like, I'm thinking...
In the start of the movie, Bilbo has it.
Yeah, Bilbo has it, and he becomes, like, a monster for a minute. He goes like, rah! And reaches for the ring.
That's right, yes.
And it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, shit. Monster Bilbo.
Monster Bilbo. So,
maybe Bilbo calls up the service and he's like, listen, I really need to get this ring, like, away from me.
Gandalf? Because he's the one who sets everything in motion?
But you're thinking about, like, how the actual movie works. I'm trying to think of, like,
okay.
Who owns this ring, needs it sent away,
so
as though it's the real courier service.
As if Lord of the Rings took place over FedEx.
Yes.
How would that work? So, clearly, yes. Bilbo would have called up FedEx and been like, hey guys, I got this really special ring. I'll pay extra for handling so it doesn't get wrecked.
Right.
Get your best fellowship on this.
And he is going to pay extra for the, psychic protection so that the fellowship doesn't get absorbed by the ring? How would you word that in an office, though?
I'm thinking, like, I'm trying to make... Because sort of the idea of an office comedy is how mundane it is, right?
Right.
Like, The Office is probably the best example, but also Parks and Rec, or even, say, Futurama, which is doing sort of what we're doing, where it's fantastical... But
to them,
it's completely mundane, except for Philip J. Fry, of course, who is our surrogate, who finds it fantastical.
Right.
So I'm thinking, like, we have to make it much more mundane. I don't think we necessarily make it just a ring. I think the ring is magical.
Right.
But, like, I'm trying to think of a real-world analog to a magical ring. Like, it's like if you... were to FedEx cocaine.
Okay.
So in this, Bilbo and Sauron are mates, and Bilbo is
they're
like...
They're long-distance romantic partners?
No, they like, hung out in college a lot.
Oh, mates like friends,
chums. They did a lot of rings
cocaine.
Together.
Oh, okay.
You know, they used to...
They wore a lot of rings.
They used to get really invisible... together.
Yes, I'm with you.
I love how this is, like, the most powerful thing, MacGuffin, in the story, and all it does is make you invisible and make a bunch of demon men on horses chase after you.
Yeah, it turns out there's a lot more to it that's only in the Silmarillion.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, the ring telling you that it's going to make you super powerful is literally just a straight-up lie.
Oh.
The ring is actually not super powerful. It's only... super powerful
to Sauron.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's 100% like a fake out lie, okay. And the invisible factor is just kind of like,
why did Sauron put all his power in the ring?
Again, it's all explained in the Silmarillion, and it doesn't really make sense.
He's like, I'm really powerful. Yeah. I'll put all my power in this.
Yeah. Well, because it was given to one of the kings of men or whatever, remember?
But not his ring.
Lost. No, Sauron had it for himself. And Sauron, the physical body of Sauron,
His finger got cut off by a man.
Yeah.
One of them men.
Yeah. So we put all the power in the ring so that he would be invincible, right? It's like a Harry Potter style.
Already then, if he had all that power?
Not necessarily. I don't know if he necessarily made the rings either. I don't know who made the rings.
Okay.
There's a YouTube video we could watch. We could watch it right now.
Neil Cicerega's Guide to the Lord of the Rings races?
No, but that probably is also a very good
one. That's a very good one.
I was thinking of CJP Gray's videos, where it's a little Stickman.
That Stickman guy. Video.
Yeah, he has a whole thing about, this is the plot of Lord of the Rings.
Okay, great.
That is not in the movies or in the books.
Okay.
There's just, like, the magical races. Like how Gandalf is an angel man. What? The wizards aren't humans, they're like magical beings.
Yeah, they're like gods.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Even after watching the video, I still barely know.
Yeah.
Should we add a new character?
Maybe. So I'm liking that Bilbo and Sauron, you know, they used to get high together, they used to get invisible together all the time, back in college, and like, you know, Sauron calls up Bilbo and is like, dude, I need my fix. Like, can you, I'll FedEx you some money if you send me the One Ring. And Bilbo's like, fine.
I used up all my rings, man.
And so Bilbo agrees. He calls up the Fellowship, which is the name of the courier service.
Mm-hmm.
We really have to get King DDD involved in this somehow.
Do we?
Maybe we can ignore King DDD.
Maybe he's just, like, a guy they meet.
All right. This can just be an AU Lord of the Rings where... Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of thinking of it not really necessarily in an alternate universe, just in an alternate storytelling style.
Okay.
So, like, you say all your stuff about Bilbo and Sauron being buddies. Like, I don't know if that's necessarily needed. I think we can just jump right in with them getting this ring from one place to the other. And it's just that to these characters, this is a mundane workplace
thing.
Oh,
I like that.
Oh, another quest. Another adventure.
So it is a magical ring.
Yeah, so they're doing everything.
If you were to ship a magical ring through FedEx, the courier wouldn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's more like they are... their lives are fictional fantasy lives, right?
Okay.
So meeting a dragon is actually pretty humdrum. Because I just rescued like 10 damsels last week, and there's a dragon here, and oh, look, some magical elves.
Yeah.
He's got his magical elf eyes or whatever.
Elf eyes.
That's right. And, we gotta take this MacGuffin. What's the MacGuffin this week? Oh, a ring. Okay, we got a magical ring. So it's just very humdrum to the characters.
Right. So basically, it's Lord of the Rings plus mundanity, modernity, perhaps even just like
they're all going to talk very
modern
and normal, and they're going to talk to the camera.
Right. Yeah.
That's the main thing. Is I want it to be like a script.
Who did we decide was Jim? Was it Legolas?
Legolas, because Legolas and Gimli have a friendly
and
rivalry.
Gimli is definitely.
So again, it doesn't need to be exact 1-to-1.
No, sure. I'm just trying to figure out who's the one who looks at the camera and is like...
Well, they all could at some point.
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Can you believe this? Who's our Jason Bateman? Who is our Jim? Who is our...
Jason Bateman
in Arrested Development.
Oh,
He looks at the camera and is
right.
Can you believe my family?
That's right.
But little does he know.
I feel like Sam mostly.
Yeah, okay. Because Sam is the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. But there is a certain cynicism to how Jim looks at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Sam wouldn't be cynical about it. He'd be more like, uh-oh.
Maybe it's Gandalf. Because the whole thing does have a feeling of herding cats. Gandalf trying to get his fucking hobbits to just stay alive, move this ring
fool
along.
Fool of a Took.
That's right.
But instead, that whole fool of a Took aimed at a single glance at the video cameras.
So imagine that entire spiel in the first movie where he's like, yes, we've had breakfast. What about second breakfast?
Right.
And then the camera slightly blurs and we focus on Gandalf in the background staring directly
into
the
camera. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Oh, fucking hobbits.
Yeah.
Why did I pick hobbits?
Yeah. Okay.
Frodo and the Fellowship just taking this ring.
Okay.
Sauron.
So, if we are to take the Lord of the Rings films and make them mundane, a mundane adventure, the way that you make mundaneness interesting for a television audience is character drama.
Mm-hmm.
Interpersonal drama is how, like, The Office or Parks and Rec makes their pretty boring office jobs interesting. Like, we don't really get into how Dunder Mifflin makes their paper or sells their paper or whatever.
Yeah.
But we know that they do it, but meanwhile, like, will they, won't they?
Yeah.
So, how do we apply that to the adventure of the Fellowship of the Ring? I think because all of the drama that comes from their adventure is coming into conflict while going on their quest. Like, they come across the ring race, they come across the spider, the big spider, they come across Gollum, who, you know, can we trust him, can we not? It's like, I think we remove all of the baddies.
Would we want to remove the baddies, though? Because that's where all the fun and stuff happens. Because it would be like, the ringwraiths come, and then Frodo puts on the ring, and then he turns invisible. And someone else is like, oh, yeah, great for you. Good plan. Good strategy. Okay. Now we're all invisible. Oh, wait, we're not all invisible, just you are.
But that sounds more like a satire. Do we want to play?
Yeah.
So we're just making a Mel Brooks film.
I guess that
about
is what
Lord
I'm
of
pitching,
the Rings. Okay, I mean, we can do that.
Yeah.
That's sort of a different thing than what we had been discussing. I am down for a Mel Brooks Lord of the Rings.
But with an office.
Yeah, with a
bend.
Mundaneness.
They're narrating.
To it.
They're making a documentary.
Yes.
About their quest.
Which does honestly sound like is Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is not in the public domain.
Oh no, for sure not.
Dang. Because that's like.
Not. I guess I don't know for sure.
I mean, it's old enough that it should be, but I'm sure Warner Brothers has copyrighted it or whatever.
Who knows?
However, you skirt that. Mm-hmm. Because I'm about to say, like, this is actually a very good idea.
It's like a really good short, an animated short. Right? Yeah. I'm sure there have been a million terrible, like, Flash animation.
Sure.
Lord of the Rings parodies. Weren't we just watching
the
old one from back in the day?
The One Ring to Rule Them All.
Right.
Yeah. By Legendary Frog.
Oh, yeah. That old guy. What was that site where all them...
Newgrounds?
Newgrounds,
yeah.
I was never big into Newgrounds, but...
Still around.
I know it by reputation.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this would make a Newgrounds
It would.
Video.
It's actually kind of the perfect era for... Mm-hmm. Because The Office would have been popular, Lord of the Rings. It's like it's very much a thing that would have been very big in the mid-2000s.
We
are missing our chance on this one. But that's okay.
Back in the game. Okay, this is a good idea. But let's put a pin in it.
Okay.
And let's think about what else could be a good idea. Should we roll some other characters?
Do we just want to... Are we telling a different story?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what?
That's one pitch.
I like that. Okay, so this pitch is basically Lord of the Rings, except very mundane and has a documentary film crew following them.
In the style of The Office.
In the style of The Office.
Also King DDD is there.
Also
I keep forgetting that King DDD is there.
I feel like, you know what? I think the first character... for our next story will be King DDD.
I think we will
carry King DDD over because he didn't really become useful in that story.
He didn't really work out, unfortunately.
So, our next character is
Oh, no.
We don't French know how to writer, say. Intellectual, existential philosopher, and political... Oh, God. It's not even... Political... Oh, no.
Activist?
Activist, feminist, and social theorist, Simone de Beauvoir. Now, of course I know everything about Simone de Beauvoir.
The French writer, intellectual, existentialist, philosopher, political activist, feminist,
thank you, Bahar, for this suggestion. I very much appreciate this suggestion. Now, do you have... What kind of story are you interested in telling right now? What is happening in the culture?
Maybe we can just, like, take an aspect and combine it with our characters, but not necessarily focus on Simone de Beauvoir because we don't know anything about her. But, like, how would King DDD write his feminist theory?
If King DDD
yes.
was a feminist...
Activist, writer, philosopher. Existentialist philosopher...
Okay.
Political activist, yes.
Interesting. I do like this.
Dreamland.
In the world of Dreamland.
Is Kirby a girl or a boy?
Kirby is.
Or is he a Kirby?
A boy in North America and genderless in Japan.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
I was going to say, because I feel like he and him is used for writing.
Yes.
But that's a North American thing, and then they and them for Japan. Mm. Or just like a Kirby.
Yeah. The Kirby is actually one of many gender-neutral Nintendo characters. Yoshi is also gender-neutral.
Oh, interesting.
So, how...
So maybe King Dedede is more focusing on existential theory.
Are there any sort of female characters within the Kirby universe? There, in the anime, there was that
girl character. Yeah. I don't know much about any kind of storyline. I only ever played Kirby's Dream Land
for yeah.
the Game Boy back in the day.
I mean,
not
dope
even
game.
Game Boy Color, like Game Boy yeah. Big Fat Gray Brick.
Dope game.
The best.
Dope game.
I feel like there's not a lot of like feminist theory that you can parse through that because it's mostly just like little random monsters that you come across and then suck up and swallow. So a lot of existential
questions
being raised.
That's
you know
very
is
interesting.
He eating them? Is he a cannibal? But then in later games, he absorbs part of their essence.
What is... Now, I'm going to... Really quick, and I'm no dummy. Can we do a very quick rundown for the audience on what existentialism is?
I guess I don't really know how to
Can
define
we
it.
Bullet point it very quick.
Okay.
I am going to... Existential...
That's a good point, actually.
...ism... A philosophical theory or approach that emphasizes the existence of the individual person as a free and responsible agent determining their own development through acts of the will.
So basically, what am I here for? What is my purpose? Who am I? Why does this all exist? Kind of...
Which
are the broad strokes?
Is a sort of interesting question within a video game where the object is to get to the goal and fight the bad guy.
Like, think of a Goomba's life.
Yeah.
And they're walking one direction, and then they run into a pipe. And so they turn around and they walk the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
But they run into a cliff edge. So they turn around and walk the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
And are they, at the same time, like, chatting with their buddy... And they're like, you know, we've been walking back and forth from this pipe to this cliff edge for as long as about I can remember. And who's that guy in the distance? Is he getting closer? Does he look like he's getting closer? I don't know. You're overthinking it.
You're thinking
about it too much.
Look,
there's a pipe in our way. We should turn around. Okay.
It's something I think about a lot in... It's something that keeps me up late at night... Frequently,
on the regular,
is, are Goombas evil?
Are they sentient?
I feel like Koopas, have an allegiance to King Koopa.
Right.
It would make sense that Bowser, they are agents of Bowser. They are agents of King Koopa.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Goomba despite being dangerous to Super Mario and Super Luigi, I feel like they might be neutral in the whole fight against...
Yeah, I don't think they're, like, aligned with Bowser. I don't think they work for him. I think they're just naturally occurring monsters.
Yeah,
you
they
know?
Just...
Like a wolf in the forest.
Exactly.
It's dangerous to you, but it's not like it's your enemy's wolf.
Exactly. If you come across a wolf on your adventure to save the damsel, that wolf isn't working for the evil wizard.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a wolf that you have come across.
But it is still dangerous to you, so it is still self-defense that you defeated.
Yes.
When you jump upon the wolf's head, and he bursts into stars, and perhaps several coins as well, as happens.
Now, the Goomba of the Kirby universe is the Waddle Dee.
Yeah, I don't know that much about Kirby.
Waddle Dee.
I don't know what a Waddle Dee is.
It's basically a Kirby... But brown and...
Oh, those little dudes!
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like a brown penguin.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Exactly.
All right.
And they have sentience for sure, because occasionally they will befriend you. There are good Waddle-Dees within the universe that are your friends, and there
can you talk to some people?
There is no, like, talking. There's no, like...
Oh, but some of them won't overtly kill you.
It's more like in Kirby and the Crystal Shards, there is a Waddle Dee that helps you on your adventure.
Oh.
And, there is a what do you call it? Like, a bridge. Not a bridge, but, like, a vertical elevator.
Okay, all right.
That he runs, like he spins it, and so you stand on it, and then the Waddle Dee will spin it for you. And he's your friend, the Waddle Dee. He wears,
funny.
I believe, a bandana, so you can recognize him against the rest of the Waddle Dees.
That's my friend.
That's my good Waddle Dee pal.
My good buddy Waddle Dee William.
Okay. So, I think what we're pitching is an existential novel, say The Outsider, or which I suppose is more of a work of nihilism, but a novel of existentialism starring King Dedede.
Or is it an essay by King Dedede?
See, I feel like...
Is it written by King Dedede, is what I'm saying. The character of King Dedede is our fake author.
Do we want a certain amount of narration, then? Or do we want it to be a pure essay? I suppose...
Like a fictional essay.
Yes, but is it a essay that would just be how King Dedede would think of the topic of existentialism within his universe?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it...
I think that's what I'm thinking of. I think you nailed it the first time.
Okay.
Yeah. An essay about existentialism, written by King Dedede, about the ethics of Dreamland.
Right.
And about the
about free will within Dreamland.
Yeah.
So, there is a mechanic in a lot of the newer Kirby games where you can take an enemy and make them befriend you. Kirby.
So, not just befriending, but like, hey, you're my friend now, for sure.
We are going to kill all of
control.
Your old partners, old coworkers.
Oh, boy.
Now you are on my side. You are essentially my slave.
Oh, boy.
And you know what? Once you lose all your life points, I'm just going to replace you
no longer useful.
With a different friend.
Right, that is why they call Kirby Dreamland's greatest monster.
I mean, essentially, like, also, what
because
are they...
Because his goals are above all else, are more important to him than the autonomy and lives of everyone around him.
What does it say about agency if someone, if... The hero of your world is able to absorb you and then take on your characteristics. And you no longer exist, However, this creature now has your defining characteristic.
Mm-hmm.
And uses it for their benefit until it is no longer useful to them.
So it's insult upon injury. Not only has he destroyed you, but he's going to take... You are going to help your enemy defeat all of your loved ones and the people in your village.
You spent your... You were born a knight, and you learned the ways of the sword. You spent years mastering the blade. And this pink puffball comes, he opens his big dang mouth, he sucks you in, he presses the down button, and all of a sudden, he has that thing that you worked so hard to master.
And he's a sword master now?
Now he's a sword master.
I think so.
What does that say about your agency? What does that say about free will?
Yeah. What kind of cruel god would allow this kind of injustice to happen as a natural mechanic occurring within our world?
What would the god HAL Laboratory do? Who, I'm wondering, like, so, if we can posit that the enemies in Dreamland do have agency, which I think we can posit far more than any Mario enemy or Sonic enemy, because they have been given personality far more than a Goomba has or a Koopa has, where we see them, especially when they have become allied, we see that they do have personality. We see that they are a full character. So we can assume that the cutter guy, the guy that throws the cutter blade...
Right. Cuttery nose.
Cuttery nose. I'm going to really quickly look up Kirby enemies.
Yeah. I want to look up philosophers.
Okay.
Waddle-Dee and Waddle-Doo.
Oh, yeah, Waddle-Doo is also a character. So, Wheelie, I feel like, has a full personality.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirby is just able to absorb that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Rogue from the X-Men has that.
Yeah.
But it's sort of different. Like, but there is an element of that where, like,
It's a physical attribute that she absorbs. It's not necessarily a skill.
Yeah.
She's not going to suddenly know how to speak Polish. What does she absorb?
I think she can absorb things like that. I think she absorbs memories and trauma. Oh. I believe that is an element to her power.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I think if we are to suggest that Kirby is also rogue-like, then... Kirby is also absorbing Sir Kibble's memories.
His essence.
His essence, his agency, everything that we would define as a person's, as a human's humanness.
Right.
And you know what Kirby does? Just keeps smiling.
That's right.
He doesn't have a care in the world. He doesn't even notice. It's not, like, Rogue, we see experiencing, like, living through the trauma of, say, Captain Marvel, I think?
I think so.
That's where she got her flying powers.
Yeah, it sounds right.
But that, like, really is a traumatic thing for her.
Should we look it up?
Yeah, sure. Southern Belle, Runaway.
Yeah, Miss Marvel.
Miss Marvel, okay. So Rogue absorbs Miss Marvel's powers, but also, if my memory of what
X-Men lore,
X-Men fans have told me, is that, like, it screws her up and, like, is a traumatic thing for her to have happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so is King Dedede suggesting that Kirby has absorbed so much trauma, so much good and bad, and the full gamut of existence, that to have that purity of existence removes, like... I'm going somewhere.
Yeah, no.
Removes, because
this
Kirby's...
This is bated breath.
I'm Kirby's whole personality is unaffectedness.
Right.
He smiles in the face of adversity. And perhaps King Dedede's whole thesis is that if someone is to absorb a Bomber, a Sir Kibble, a Jack, a Waddle Doo,
a Twister, I mean,
a Glunk,
Giant Rocky, Mini,
a UFO.
These are really good names.
They are very good names. That the pain and the joy and the... It would almost go unaffected. Like, it's like part of...
It's too much to process.
Part of the idea of Watchmen, which is a pop existential work,
right?
Is Dr. Manhattan, if someone were to have the power of Superman, of a god, but standing among men,
right,
they would lose their humanity.
Right.
That is what Dr. Manhattan happened to Kirby, and that is what King Dedede's thesis is.
Interesting. What I kind of am interested in is writing this as a conversation. So Simone de Beauvoir has a group of friends in her apartment in Paris.
Okay.
And perhaps Immanuel Kant is there. And Simone de Beauvoir and King Dedede, her new friend, has some really interesting ideas that he's positing. Maybe Sigmund Freud.
Okay.
He stopped in for a glass of whiskey and a chat, maybe a cigar or two. And King Dedede is explaining to them the mechanisms of the world from which he comes, which is very different from the world in which they know.
For sure.
And so we could get some really interesting insight.
So what I'm imagining is a light documentary. You know those documentaries that are essentially just like a bunch of smart people talking?
Yeah, no. So what I'm thinking is like that, only like a stage play. You know, it's like a one scene stage play where it's just like literally just a conversation.
Yes.
So the text is actually just what everyone has said. Right?
Exactly.
And maybe there's some stage direction, like gets up, lights cigar or something.
Yes.
But it's just what they're saying is just the meat and potatoes of the thing. So the problem is, I don't know what Kant's theories are. I don't really even know what Freud's whole deal was.
Is Freud an existentialist, though?
No, not necessarily. But I just like the idea of, like, well-known
smart
philosophies.
Right.
Specific philosophies.
I am going to read... Speed read some existentialism.
Should we just, like, take a break and learn some existential... So I'm not necessarily talking about, like, all of the Kirby lore or whatever, but just the one core mechanism of absorption of another being, which does destroy the being, right?
Yes.
He doesn't, like, spit them out or
poop
them out or something.
If you spit them out, they will fly and die.
You don't absorb their essence or whatever. Or you can swallow them.
Yes.
Physically swallow them and
absorb
their essence and gain a skill or a power of theirs for your own use.
Exactly.
And is it like a sex thing? Is it like a Vor thing? Does he swallow them and then you can like see the outline in Kirby's belly for just a split second? If you know where to like slow down the frames, then
I'm gonna pause
it. And then
that
it disappears. And then it's just Kirby's regular.
Kirby
size.
Is very asexual.
Yes. Yeah. That sounds right.
I think
right.
Most characters...
Side, there's probably a lot of Kirby
porn. I would say that 90% of Nintendo characters are asexual. Exceptions are Link, who...
But even then,
no, like, I would say Link is asexual.
He's never officially had a relationship.
I would say even though Link is asexual, Zelda. I would say all of the love interests are...
They're horny for Link, but...
They're horny for Link.
He's not a son.
Yeah. I would say... No, I would say
in my personal fan fiction, he's very horny for
them. He's very
horny.
But
not necessarily in the canon.
Yeah, I would say... I'm trying to think, like, Samus is 100% asexual.
Is she robosexual?
She might be robosexual. Captain Falcon, like, he probably fucks, but, like, who knows, right? Like, who knows
really
with that guy?
He really likes nipple play.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have a lot to do with, like, his partners.
Yeah. Fox doesn't fuck. Like, I know furries everywhere. I'm sorry. I love you, furries.
Fox?
I'm not anti-furry. I love furries.
Well, Fox is so hot, though.
Fox doesn't fuck. That's...
Listen.
True.
The greatest of the Star Fox games and one of my personal favorite games, Star Fox Adventures.
You are correct.
Star Fox Adventures.
Star Fox Adventures.
Star Fox game. Which I
maybe
love.
Star Fox Adventures implies that Fox fucks. I guess Fox does
He's
fuck.
He's very fucky. He's fuckable.
They sure have that saxophone
really
music.
Hot. Do they have saxophone music in it?
Yeah, I only know it because of Feminist Frequency. We are so off topic.
I don't know. We're talking about the fuckability, the sexuality of Nintendo's roster. And Mario, forget about Mario.
Oh,
he's
Mario.
Just like this personalityless, genderless, asexual.
Fuck.
Yeah.
And Peach doesn't fuck, and Bowser doesn't fuck. No Mario character
but you
fucks.
You get married, though.
But
someone
it doesn't.
The honeymoon.
I feel like the marriage is a child idea of marriage.
Right.
It's like when you played marriage.
Right.
Did you ever play marriage on the playground?
Probably. I don't remember specific.
It was a thing that I played on the playground.
Okay.
I officiated my friend Bradley and Raylene's wedding.
That's amazing. Both that you remember that, and also that you did that at all. That's amazing. Oh, by the way, we're talking strictly about, like, Nintendo's canon depictions of these characters. Obviously, the fan-in versions of Bowser and Mario and Peach, they're fucking all day, every day, forever.
As the editing manager and managing editor of the fanfiction writer room.
Yes.
Oh, we are very familiar with how Nintendo characters work.
Oh boy, forget about it.
But canonically, I would say just about. I would say Fox fucks for sure. You're right. Fox does fuck.
Mm-hmm.
I would say even Captain Falcon. I don't know if he fucks. I'm trying to think who else. Is
Ganon?
There?
No,
no.
Ganon. He's so magical.
Yeah.
He's obsessed with power and whatnot.
Also, he's the only male in his species. Yeah.
Is he still even a Gerudo? I thought he was more like a magical entity.
No, I mean, I think he becomes a magical entity through the power of the Triforce.
But he started as Gerudo, right?
Yes, it is like he transcended his original form.
Hmm. Should we have an episode that's just all about lore? Let's go through Zelda's lore, and then let's talk about the Lord of the Rings lore.
That would be a fun thing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of. I'm gonna right now. This is how we're gonna end the episode. this is how we're ending the episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna type in. I'm just gonna go to. I guess. Nintendo. Characters.
Like a wiki of Nintendo
list
characters.
Of Nintendo characters. Animal Crossing? No one fucks in Animal Crossing.
No one's even heard of fucking Animal Crossing.
Brain Age? No one fucks in Brain Age.
Yeah.
The Cruisin' series? Those cars.
I don't think people
don't
even exist in Cruisin'. It's just cars. It's not like it's people in cars.
Donkey Kong?
Oh, Donkey Kong does.
Yeah, Donkey Kong fucks.
He's like the only one in the world, in his jungle world, but he definitely does. I don't know about Diddy, but Donkey Kong.
No, Diddy does.
Sure.
I mean, Diddy has a girlfriend. Diddy and...
Oh, that's right. Dixie.
And
was there a Trixie, too?
Yes, but Trixie is different.
Hmm.
Trixie's not a girlfriend.
Okay.
And then Donkey Kong has Candy Kong.
Oh, that's right.
So both of them fuck.
And Cranky Kong, in his youth, he was unstoppable.
He was unstoppable. Mm-hmm. Okay, so F-Zero.
That's where Captain Falcon comes from.
That's where Captain Falcon comes from. There's a bunch of other characters in it.
Right.
I'm going to just say they probably fuck.
Yeah.
Just because, like, we can assume they're anime enough to fuck. Mm-hmm.
The Fire Emblem characters do not fuck, but they do make love.
Ooh, true.
Yes, they will kiss and they will get hot and heavy, but it always fades to black.
It does.
It's very romantic.
Yes.
In every way. I don't know what Golden Sun is. So
I have never played a Golden Sun
game.
They
probably don't fuck.
They probably don't
Nintendo.
Fuck. Yeah.
Kid Icarus.
I'm gonna say, oh, you know what?
He's
in the original, in the Nintendo
original
Kid Icarus game.
The R-rated scene that they cut from North American audiences where he fucks 10 angels in orgy? I do. I remember that.
We all do. We are our entire audience is now having a vivid flashback.
That's right. You thought you'd buried it, but it's back, baby.
No, what I am getting at is there is, if you get the good ending in Kid Icarus, becomes Adult Icarus, and he saves.
Does his name actually become Adult Icarus?
No, he's just
Kid
now.
Icarus?
Now he's just an adult. He's just a man.
He's Kid Icarus Senior.
And he saves Lady Palutena, and that's like,
okay,
hey,
baby.
Hey. So I'm gonna say. The original Nintendo canon, the original NES game, Pit fucks.
Oh, that's right. His name isn't Icarus. His name is Pit.
Duh. However, in the early 2000s remake for the Nintendo DS.
Oh, the gritty R-rated.
Yeah. That Kid Icarus, that Pit, does not fuck. Kirby does not fuck.
No, sir.
Link doesn't fuck. But all the love interests fuck.
Everyone else in Link's entire world fucks. All the time, though. And he doesn't.
He's the only one who doesn't fuck.
It's a shame.
Mario doesn't fuck. Samus doesn't fuck.
Ness? In the Mother Games? I mean, he's a kid, but I feel like...
He's a kid.
There's a lot of, like, jokes for adults in those games, you know? It feels like the adults are fucking.
What I'm going to say, do the Charlie Brown characters fuck? The adults. Not the kids.
I think they do.
Then we can also posit the adults in the Mother series fuck.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I feel like the Mother series very much borrows aesthetically and in essence.
Yeah, because there would be a lot of things
for
where
Charlie Brown?
There's like misunderstandings. Like, oh, mommy went with my teacher and they needed a secret meeting or something or whatever.
There is also actually a lot of adult themes in the Mother series, like if you remember, the pretty much one of the first things that happens in the Earthbound series is what's his face, the bad kid, Porky gets beat by his parents. His parents beat
him.
That's
right. Yeah,
so
yeah.
In a world where child abuse exists, also adults are fucking.
Yeah, that's a good rule of thumb. Yeah.
Nintendo Wars, I have not played any Nintendo Wars games, so I cannot posit. Pikmin, Olimar is not fucking, and we know that Pikmin are born of...
The little Pikmin dudes, like, they're natural animal kind of things, so they might mate, but they don't fuck.
But we know how they reproduce.
Do we? I never played Pikmin.
They're plants. They're...
Oh, so they just get planted with seeds or whatever.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Pilot Wings, I mean, I don't even think Pilot Wings is worth talking about. Pokemon, fuck. Pokemon is the...
Canonically? You can put a mommy and a daddy in a room and a baby will come out.
This is how we are ending the podcast. Pokemon is the horniest Nintendo franchise.
Canonically?
Pokemon fuck. I don't know if the humans in Pokemon fuck.
Mm-hmm.
But Pokemon?
I don't think the humans do in the Pokemon universe.
I also don't think the humans do.
The humans in the Pokemon universe are probably really confused.
Oh.
They're just like, we put this male Pikachu
and
this male Electabuzz together. And something happened. I don't know what happened. I baby came out.
I believe the man at the daycare center is just like, I found this egg. I don't know where it came from.
Where did eggs come from?
Where do eggs come from? Here, take an egg. And you're like, okay, thank you, mm-hmm. man, adult.
Yeah.
Old man who doesn't know what fuck is. From.
A mama kisses a daddy, and then the screen goes black. A baby's appeared.
A baby's appeared. Well, a stork
baby
brings
doesn't
the
appear.
Thing.
A 10-year-old appears and goes on his Pokemon journey. Yeah. That's where life begins, right?
We are Anyways, professional fan fiction writers. You've been listening to Fan Fiction Writer Room. If you want to suggest characters, send...
And you want us to delve deep into the lore. And ask if they do or do not fuck, canonically.
Into the lore. Mm-hmm. Send your suggestions to ffwrshow@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
I'm your managing editor, Liz Cernick.
And I'm your editing manager, Spencer Sforis.
And remember, canonically, Pokemon fuck.
Pokemon fuck so much.
Oh, man.